Well, now we'll welcome the listeners from KPTZ, and we will turn it over to you, Dr. Barry, for our monthly health update.
Well, hello, everyone. On the COVID-19 front, we are at a point after the lifting of the declaration of emergency where we have a lot less data available to us. So the CDC is reporting quite a bit less, particularly on the national level. And so things that we used to report, like how many deaths per day in the United States, are not currently available. I do think we will start being able to access those kind of data to some extent in the coming weeks, but they're still figuring out how to move forward with COVID-19 data reporting after the lifting of the declaration of emergency. But we do see overall trends. So hospitalizations in the United States due to COVID-19 are down 8%. Interestingly, deaths are actually up 7% in the United States, which is usually those tracked together. Could be an anomaly. It's a little bit too early to see if that's really going to be a true trend. In Washington state, thankfully, hospitalizations and deaths continue to downtrend. In Jefferson County, we've had a total of 3 hospitalizations in the last month, so less than 1 per week, which is hopeful and certainly much better than we have seen in some higher activity periods for COVID-19. Unfortunately, we do have 2 new deaths to report this week. One was a person in their 90s. Who had underlying conditions and was not vaccinated. The other person was in their 50s, had underlying conditions and was also not vaccinated. And so that brings our total death toll up to 39. And I think it does speak to a trend that we are seeing around the country, which may actually explain that spike in deaths that we're seeing. Which is that we're seeing fading immunity from either if you're moving through the world with just prior infection as your immunity, we are seeing that start to fade. And so we are seeing a return of severe disease. So if you haven't moved forward with getting vaccinated, or you're not up to date, if you haven't gotten your bivalent booster, it is really important to move forward with getting that to maintain that protection against COVID-19 and severe disease from it. In neighboring Clallam County, we've had only 2 hospitalizations in the last month and no new deaths to report. So a total of 173 in Clallam. We are starting to see some small outbreaks in communities that are under vaccinated, particularly among kids right now. So we're seeing if folks who have not gotten their bivalent, and unfortunately our kids are our least vaccinated group. So we are seeing pockets of transmission, particularly related to children right now. So a really good reminder to move forward with getting that bivalent or to take sickness seriously. If you have a kid who is looking ill in any way, remember to move forward with getting them tested so we can reduce the risk of severe disease for them or transmitting the disease to others. That's most of my updates on COVID-19. I do want to give a brief update about Mpox. So we talked a lot about Mpox, formerly called monkeypox, last year, and thankfully we saw a significant reduction in transmission, but we have still seen sporadic cases throughout the winter, and in some parts of the country we've started to see clusters of increased infection, particularly in the Chicago area and parts of the Midwest. We are not well vaccinated enough to prevent a subsequent surge in Mpox this summer. And so we are really encouraging folks in the community to consider getting vaccinated. Mpox continues to disproportionately affect members of the gay and bisexual and transgender community. So if you are in that community, if you have multiple partners, if you're engaging in anonymous sexual activity or sex work, you qualify for an Mpox vaccine. And we have those vaccines at our health department. We'd encourage you to contact us. It is not exclusive to that community, but disproportionately affecting that community. If you are a heterosexual person who has multiple partners or is engaging in anonymous sexual activity or sex work, you also qualify for an Mpox vaccine. And so we encourage you to move forward with getting vaccinated in preparation for what we expect will be some degree of a surge this summer. So with that, I'm happy to take any questions from the commissioners.
Questions?
Yeah, go ahead. Hey, Dr. Barry. So I have been, really appreciating and taking advantage of having had a relatively recent COVID infection. And it feels like a bit of a holiday to not have to worry about it and doing international travel and not being concerned and not masking. Any sense of kind of with the current variants, how long some protection is lasting in terms of immunity? And I guess that would go for the bivalent booster too, now that we have a chunk of time, do we have a sense of kind of generally how long that's lasting? And I know there's a lot of factors around different people's immune responses, but any general guidelines?
Sure, there is. There's certainly some variability, but you can roughly count on about 90 days of protection from a prior infection. With the bivalent booster, we are seeing that likely protection lasts even longer than that, but we're seeing a fading of protection around 6 months for those over 65 or those who are immunosuppressed. We are still seeing good protection for those who don't fall into that category, but none of these sources of protection are 100%. And so you do want to consider the environment that you're in and your own personal risk factors. But if you've gotten a bivalent, you're under 65, you're not immunosuppressed, you're still pretty well protected. That doesn't mean you're guaranteed. And so I wouldn't recommend, you know, going into a 200 person close indoor space without a mask on, because the risk of picking up COVID in that space does increase. But you can, you know, go to a restaurant, go do some of those normal indoor activities without a mask on if you're up to date, because you really are carrying a good amount of protection. If you're over 65 and it's been more than 4 months since your last bivalent booster, we do encourage you to get an additional one so you can boost that protection back up and prevent yourself from getting sick and certainly prevent severe disease as well. I think you've got at least a 90-day window since your last infection, potentially longer depending on what other immunity you've got on board. If you're up to date on your vaccines and you've had a recent infection, that protection could last even longer, potentially up to 6 months.
Just a bit of a follow-up. I think it was maybe a month ago that immunocompromised folks were encouraged to get a second bivalent booster. Mm-hmm. As I will be a caregiver of a very immunosuppressed person again and soon here, is there any talk of caregivers getting additional boosters as well?
Not at this time. And so good reminder that if you're an immunosuppressed individual, you actually qualify as short as 2 months after your last bivalent to get an additional. And it's worth discussing with your provider if additional vaccines are recommended beyond that for those who are in the immunosuppressed category. It is approved that you could actually get vaccinated every few months if you're in that very high risk group to try to maintain some immune coverage. There's not a recommendation right now for caregivers to get additional vaccines, primarily because the expectation is that your immune system is responding normally to the vaccine, which should last longer than the average person. But I think it is always worth taking into account as we navigate our world and our risk profile, who's at home that we're taking care of to reduce our risk of transmission. Thankfully, we have another benefit working for us, which is if you're up to date in your vaccines, we are seeing a lot less pre-symptomatic transmission. So you're much less likely to bring it home to your partner because you're more likely to get symptoms before you're contagious. And so if you're caring for a high-risk individual, paying close attention to your body and responding to your symptoms and testing early, and wearing a mask if you're sick around them is a good way to reduce that risk of transmission to the people at home.
Thank you.
Okay. So I think I want to do the way back machine or the time machine here. A couple of people have been asking me, you know, I've been hearing about cases of COVID, people who've been traveling, getting them elsewhere and coming back. And, but a couple of questions have come up like, what are the symptoms of COVID again? People haven't gotten it yet. We haven't talked about that for so long. So could you just remind us briefly what the symptoms of COVID are?
Sure. So COVID, unfortunately, the symptoms of COVID can be quite broad, but most people, your early symptoms will feel like a cold or the flu. So feeling feverish, fatigued, cough, sometimes runny nose, sometimes sore throat. Your standard cold symptoms can be COVID or can be a cold. You can also have GI symptoms, so like the flu. People will sometimes have diarrhea, nausea, but it's highly variable. So some people feel like they have a mild cold. Some people feel like they've been hit by a truck and they have a terrible case of the flu and everything in between. Classically, historically, we would see changes in taste and smell. We see that much less commonly with current variants. So don't let that reassure you that you don't have COVID if you can smell things. That used to be a really clear-cut differentiating factor, but it's not as much anymore. So basically, if you feel sick, if you feel like you have a cold or the flu, it could be COVID, and it's important to test to figure out if you have that, for two main reasons. One, if you're in a high-risk group, there's medicine now for COVID that works really well, and we want you to get that soon. It works better the sooner that you take it. The other reason is, of course, we don't want to give it to other people. And particularly, we don't want to give it to vulnerable people. So it's important to know your status so that you don't pass it on to others. Many jurisdictions no longer have COVID-19 tests, but we do. We still have COVID-19 tests free available at the Department of Public Health. So if you are worried that you have COVID or have been exposed, you can access those through us. And we also have them at the South County fire stations because we know there's not enough access to testing down there. And so that's another good spot where you can pick up tests. We are still distributing through the Bookmobile and the libraries as well. So there's a lot of options for testing, and we'll keep doing that as long as we have tests.
Thank you. That was just my refresh request.
Absolutely.
Refresh the basics here.
Well, and are we still seeing where people's immune response is presenting symptoms before they might test positive? So is there some benefit to testing a couple of times if you test?
Absolutely. So yeah, especially if you're up to date on your vaccines, often your first feeling is actually you feeling your immune system starting to fight this bug, which is good. That's your body doing what it's supposed to do. So if you're feeling that kind of feverish feeling, that fatigued feeling that comes with being sick, that could be just your immune response. If you test that first day and it tests negative, that doesn't mean you don't have COVID. It might just be too soon. And so we recommend staying away from high-risk folks, masking if you're feeling ill, staying home if that's accessible to you until you feel better. And if you're still feeling sick about 48 hours later, take another test because you might turn positive later in your infection. But if you've been masking, avoiding high-risk spaces, you won't have given it to anybody in that time period.
I have one quick question and a comment. I guess just a thank you for reminding people that bivalent booster is really critical. I think a lot of people maybe having been infected one time feel, you know, and they got through it fine, feel like that second, that bivalent booster is unnecessary. And I think that that is a real critical piece that, you know, anyone listening right now has not done it, they should go take care of it. My question is just as we move from contact tracing to more sentinel surveillance, mm-hmm. how does it change how we should, I guess, look at the numbers a little bit? Are we using mm-hmm. sewers? I mean, it's just a very different kind of landscape. And I'm wondering what are the metrics that you're tracking on a landscape, you know, population scale to evaluate? It's just really concerning to hear two deaths in the last couple of weeks is really sad.
Well, we are in this strange transition period where kind of the proper sentinel surveillance system has not fully been built at the state or national level. And so we're a little bit flying blind right now because we used to try to count all the cases and many hospitals were doing testing all patients who came in. And so we would find incidental cases through that as well. And most hospitals have stopped doing that. And we don't have classic sentinel surveillance set up yet, which is what that is when we do that with flu, for example, is there's particular hospitals throughout the state and country that are doing regular testing, and we use that to extrapolate out to the country as a whole. That's not going on right now, and so we don't have as much data to make good decisions as we normally would. We do have wastewater data, at least for Port Townsend, and that has dropped significantly. It's at one of the lowest rates that we've seen in quite some time, and so that bodes well for the amount of COVID-19 in the Port Townsend area, but we've never been able to test with wastewater for South County because folks are on septic. So we don't have as much info on that. What is hopeful for me and what I can still track is the people who are hospitalized for COVID. And that continues to go down, which makes me hopeful that we're seeing overall, certainly at least less severe cases and probably less cases overall as well. And that's the one I can follow right now. I am hopeful that in the next few weeks, CDC will figure out how to set up their Sentinel surveillance so we have something that we can look at. But there's a lot of transition going on at that department right now. What I would say for my own...
This is Sleepy Squirrel, and you're listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM, Port Townsend, Washington.
Certainly here. And so I make my decisions based on how many people are there, what's the ventilation in the space that I'm in, how long I'm going to be there, and my personal risk and the risk of my household. So for me, if I'm, you know, popping into the grocery store for a couple things, going to pop right out, I don't worry as much about wearing a mask in that space, which is new for a lot of us in this space. If I'm going into a small store without a lot of other people, I don't worry as much about that. I'm not that nervous about, you know, meeting up with some friends for a meal. Things that I do still wear a mask at, large, close, in-person gatherings. So, you know, if I, for like, you know, going to church, if your church is large and not that well ventilated, that's actually a really good time to wear a mask. I went to a choir concert recently and there were hundreds of people packed very close into a church, and that was a masking event for me, because that's too many people without much air circulation. So it's mostly based on that. How many people, what's the ventilation, you know, how well do you know these folks? And then your own personal risk profile as well.
Great, thank you so much. I think there's some questions from KPTZ listeners as well, so.
Yes. One person was asking a little bit about testing. So what do we do with various testing outcomes? And they asked what we would do with a faintly positive COVID-19 test. And basically any positive is a positive. So even if it's faint, count it as real. Barring kind of extreme circumstances, it's really uncommon to get a false positive. So if you have a faint positive, it's probably real and you want to act accordingly. Following a known exposure, they're wondering what you should do if you have symptoms. So you know you've been exposed to COVID, you've got symptoms, but you're testing negative. That generally, we also want you to act as if you have COVID. So if you know you've been exposed to COVID and in the right time period, you started developing symptoms to COVID, the better part of valor is to treat that like COVID. Often if you're testing negative, it's because it's too soon. So you're starting to develop those symptoms of your immune response, but your viral load hasn't spiked. So you're not testing positive yet. So we would recommend you test again in 48 hours, mask and stay home while you're ill. If you never test positive after a few tests, then it could be something else. But again, masking around others when you're ill, staying home if that's accessible, will reduce the risk of you transmitting whatever it is that you've got going on to other folks. There's no formal quarantine guidelines in any of these. Just kind of that same idea, stay home if you're sick, mask if you can't. And do what you can to reduce your risk to others. But if you do stay home when you're ill, mask when you're around others, if you're feeling a little bit off, you are really unlikely to transmit this to other people. And that makes it possible to engage a bit more in life in ways that we didn't before. There's also a good question about potential long-term consequences of repeated cases of COVID-19, especially in children. And so we do have some emerging data about the consequences of repeated COVID-19 infection. One thing that does appear to be particularly clear that we're seeing in multiple studies is that your risk of long COVID goes up with how many times you get COVID. That doesn't mean that, you know, if you've had COVID 3 or 4 times, you're definitely going to get long COVID, but the risk does increase with each subsequent COVID infection. So it's one more reason to try to avoid getting COVID again. There was this early messaging that once you'd had COVID, you were just good to go. You were never going to get it. And that's unfortunately not true. You can get it again. And we do see higher rates of long COVID illness in people who have gotten repeated infections. It's worth trying to avoid. I don't want you to panic if you are one of those folks who's had recent infections. It's not a guarantee. It's certainly far from 100% of people will get long COVID, probably more in the 5 to 7% range. But it is worth trying to avoid if you can. And it is a point of some concern because we do see repeat infections in kids, because that's the group in our community who's the least vaccinated and who continues to gather in these large group settings, i.e. school. And I think in many ways there was some errors in messaging around kids early because we knew they were less likely to get severe disease, but that doesn't mean they don't get disease and that they don't ever get severe disease. So doing what we can to protect them is worthwhile. So the group, about 50% of Jefferson County has had a bivalent booster. So about half of us still need to move forward with getting it, and kids disproportionately have not had a bivalent. So if you've got a kid in your life, it's a good idea to get them their bivalent. When they go to school, when they go to their camps, when they hang out with their friends, they're more likely to get exposed to COVID than many of us, because that's a congregate space. And getting them their bivalent makes them less likely to get sick, less likely to get severe disease, and less likely to get long COVID, which is worthwhile. There are some studies looking at particularly older adults, so looking at VA populations, that showed an increase in risk of severity actually with repeated infections. It's been a little bit more of a mixed bag looking at those studies, because part of what they were looking at was they were looking at hospitalized patients. So there are people who were already sick enough to get hospitalized every time they get COVID. And you can imagine that repeated hospitalizations is generally not good for your health overall. So there's some kind of mixed variables there. I don't think overall we're seeing an increase in severity with repeat infections, but we do see an increased risk of long COVID. So it's worth avoiding if you can. The other good question in this series of questions was about what to do if when you have a kid who lives with a vulnerable elder. And so it's a lot along the lines of what we were talking about with Commissioner Dean, is minimizing that risk where you can. Make sure the kids in your life gotten their bivalent. Most kids are not masking in school right now. And so it's really hard to ask a kid to mask differently than their friends, but if that's accessible, that's certainly one way to reduce their risk of picking up COVID and bringing it to others. The other big thing you can lean on there is that we see less pre-symptomatic transmission. And so a big part of it, if you have a high-risk elder and a small child living in the same space, is paying attention to when that kid's sick, and when they show their first signs of getting sick, testing and doing what you can to space within the household. Depends on how your household is set up, but if you can increase ventilation in the household, if you can mask when you're all together and have the child sleep in a separate place from where the elder relative is, if you can mask when you're in those shared spaces, all those things together reduce your risk of transmission. We certainly can never quarantine children away from the family, and we don't really ask most folks to quarantine anymore. But what we can do is increase ventilation, mask, sleep in separate spaces, eat in separate spaces to the extent that that's accessible, and that'll reduce your risk of giving it to others. The next question was about the TSA. Apparently there was a period of time where the TSA let people bring in larger amounts of hand sanitizer than the 3-ounce rule. They are back to requiring that hand sanitizer fit into a 3-ounce container. So don't bring a giant thing of hand sanitizer. 3 ounces should be enough to get you through your flight. The next one was talking about, there was an article in JAMA that came out in May, so not very long ago, looking at defining a definition for long COVID, which is super helpful. One of the challenges in studying long COVID is it's highly variable, and so we have to all agree on what we're talking about in order to study it. And so they came up with a definition, which is basically a scoring system that would get you qualifying as having long COVID. And I think it's quite good. It's going to be utilized in subsequent research so we can really get to the bottom of long COVID. The person who wrote asked, you know, what if you're a person who meets that criteria of long COVID, what should you do? And I think the biggest thing is to engage with your own primary care provider. Long COVID, even though you might meet this threshold, long COVID is highly variable. And the causes of it are variable. So for some people, it's persistent It's damage that was done by a severe case of COVID. For other folks, it appears to be actually a triggering of an autoimmune event, and that's treated differently. For other folks, it's just taking a long time for their body to fully recover from the infection that they had. And so you want to make sure you're getting individualized care based on your unique situation. The most common organ systems affected by long COVID are the pulmonary systems, your lungs, your heart. So people can have persistent inflammation of their heart after a COVID-19 infection, or your neurologic system. So things like brain fog, trouble concentrating, and general fatigue can kind of all be affected. When we've looked at cases and physiology around this, we see most commonly some degree of persistent inflammation as what's driving this. There is a long COVID center at the University of Washington. And so when you work with your own primary care provider, sometimes they might consider placing a referral to that center. There's been a lot of referrals to that center, and so the wait list is starting to grow. But it does mean that we have a place not too far away that we can access care for folks who are affected by long COVID. I think the other big thing to know if you are affected by long COVID is it is real. There's a lot of stress around those symptoms, and some of that stress comes from feeling like people don't believe that what you're dealing with is real, but it is real. We've found the physiologic evidence in people who have long COVID. The other hopeful thing is that in many cases, we are seeing that it improves in the months ahead. And so doing all the other normal healthy things to take care of yourself, getting rest where you can, eating a good healthy diet, making sure that you're caring for your mental health, because dealing with a new disability is a big change in many people's lives, and engaging with your primary care provider and seeking support and help where it is available. All of those things together can help you do better as you face this. Couple other things. I think this is our last one, was just a little bit about how to manage household contacts and what do you do if you have a positive person in your household. So we already talked about how to minimize exposure in your household, and they were wondering what does that mean for quarantine? Generally, we don't quarantine anymore, but one of the big asks is that you mask when you're around others. If you have someone in your household that you really can't isolate from, so I have a toddler, there is no isolating from her in my life. So in the time that she had COVID, that meant that I was masking for about 20 days when I was around other people, because I wanted to make sure I didn't give it to other folks. And so generally, you want to wait until their infection has resolved and then start your 10-day count after that. If you can isolate from this person in your house, you can start your 10-day clock from when you've isolated. But it's a good idea, better part of valor, to continue to mask for about 10 days after their infection has resolved if you can't fully isolate from them. Very last question was about masking in healthcare. So this person pointed out that they recently went to Jefferson Healthcare and were in a waiting room and most people weren't masked. And so the change in requirement has been that providers must mask when they are interacting with their patients, medical providers, but that patients are no longer required to mask. And a lot of that was based around that we are seeing decreases in cases, decreases in severe disease, and we are trying to minimize the amount that all of these requirements put pressure on individuals in our community to the places where it makes the biggest difference. It's really hard to force patients to wear masks. More and more, we're just already not wearing them. And it was causing a lot of friction between healthcare providers and their patients. And so we decided to emphasize having medical providers mask around their patients. If you are in a group that where it makes you uncomfortable to be in a space like that, one of the biggest things you can do is wear a high quality mask yourself. Even though it feels strange to be around unmasked folks, if you can tolerate a high quality mask, that's going to keep you well protected in those spaces, even around unmasked people. And if that's not accessible to you, make sure and check in with your healthcare facility. Most places have a way for you to wait in your car or wait somewhere else before you come in, so that you can just move straight into your exam room and not have to hang out in the waiting room to keep you safe. So definitely check in. There's a lot of options for folks to make you as safe as possible. I know we're close to time. Is Willie here? I know he wanted to share a little bit about heat.
Doctor's appointment.
Yeah.
He said he might be late.
But we don't have Willie. We do have a 10:15, but we can push that for a few minutes if there's any questions. So
I know one question was if we want, you know, to the extent we wanted to keep doing these meetings. My leaning is that I think it would be helpful to have this space once a month for public health, and it doesn't always have to be COVID. We can talk about COVID, but we can talk about other public health issues facing our community. So my leaning would be to keep it once a month, and we can talk about this. We could talk about harm reduction. We can talk about whatever else is on people's mind when it comes to public health.
I think that sounds great, though. Maybe we want to put some guardrails around the scope of questions that KPT. So maybe we want to kind of let folks know what we're going to be talking about the next month if it's not infectious diseases.
Sure, that makes sense.
Other thoughts?
Let me ask if 30 minutes is
still good. Oh, 30 minutes, 45 minutes? How long do you think would be appropriate?
I think 30 seems reasonable. We usually can hit that.
Yeah, it sounds like a good idea to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the people seem to get a lot of value. I certainly get value out of it. I have one just kind of follow up on the long COVID. You know, as a young adult, I had someone in my life that suffered from Lyme disease. And I'm really glad you talked about the, you know, it being real and that being a real stigma that people deal with some of these kind of difficult to pin down diseases. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering, is there any treatment for these kind of really debilitating lethargy that goes on for months and months? What is for the really kind of dire cases of long COVID that have that kind of impact, what is the treatment available?
Well, and that's part of why the first step is getting a good definition so that then we can properly study treatments, because otherwise we can be, you know, studying apples and oranges with treatments. And so there hasn't been enough research yet into proper treatments. And right now it depends on the type of long COVID that you have. So for some who have really developed an autoimmune disorder, it's kind of standard autoimmune therapy. So even immunosuppressants to try to get their body to slow down and stop attacking their body. That has shown some promise in some cases. Some folks, there's some trials of actually longer prescriptions of Paxlovid for people who might actually have persistent viral replication going on. There's other trials of actually vaccination to see if we can trigger their immune system. And then in other cases, especially when it comes from things like severe disease, where people have developed myocarditis, you're moving into more cardiac therapies. So cardiac rehabilitation or pulmonary rehabilitation and kind of focused efforts around that. So it's a broad array of treatments, and that's why you got to check in with your doctor about your particular source. But there's not a silver bullet right now for long COVID. And I think that's something to be aware of too, when, especially if you've never faced a disability in your life and you have a new diagnosis, that's an incredibly difficult time, no matter what the new disability diagnosis is. And especially when there's a lot of question about how we treat it, if we can treat it, how long this will last, just navigating that uncertainty is particularly challenging. And so you wanna definitely check in with your provider and lean on your support system. So if you have someone in your life who is dealing with long COVID, being available, trusting that it's real, trusting that they're dealing with a real thing, that can make a huge difference in their outcomes. And for many folks, it does improve over time. I know there's someone in my life who was a marathon runner before they got COVID and couldn't run more than a mile for about 6 months after they had COVID. And that was really shocking to them, really scary for them. In their case, thankfully, that's resolved, but it took a lot of time. And so having some patience with that too, that your trajectory is not fixed. Many folks do improve over time.
Thank you for that additional context. Okay. Well, thank you, Dr. Barry. And we will plan on seeing you next month, same time. Really appreciate it, and have a great day.
Thank you. Bye, everyone.
All right. And thanks to the listeners at KPTZ. We'll turn you back to your normal programming and move on to our next agenda item here. We've got